Hello and welcome to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We will, as always, start with a story.
This is a story of transformation, of shock and horror. It was a few weeks ago, about 2 months ago, when I had managed to grow my lockdown hair down to my elbows. And I didn't mean to do it, it just grew. And I thought, hey, I saw some guy on LinkedIn had donated his hair, grown his hair and donated it on purpose to the Little Princess Trust, who make wigs for children suffering with cancer and they've lost their hair through chemo. So I thought, hey, you know, I might as well do that rather than have a haircut, you know, a few inches off like I was planning to. So I asked a friend who her hairdresser was, who came to visit her at her house, and just to cut off, have it all lopped off and send it to the Little Princess Trust. So on that fateful day, the hairdresser came round, and because of COVID, we were by the back door, the big double doors were open, there was no mirrors by the back door, and I might have said something silly like, just chop it all off. I also said the word short bob, which is generally considered to be chin length, but the lady in question put the hair bands in my hair, obviously a touch too high, and with one snip of her scissors, she concluded that we were going to have to go much shorter than a short bob. And that is when my sweat glands started working overdrive and my heart was beating very, very fast. And I was repeating to myself, it's just hair, Janine, it's just hair, calm down. And I was already working out a plan B. I was thinking, okay, she's gone much shorter. She morphed into Edward Scissorhands. Her scissors were snip, 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 snip. They were going so fast. Like I couldn't even have like one of those funky long fringes at the front because she'd started cutting it all over, and hair was flying. And I thought, no, I'm gonna trust her. She's a hairdresser and she knows what she's doing. And then she started using words such as feathering. And I knew we had gone down an undesirable path with my hair. And when I looked in the mirror afterwards, I looked like Deirdre Barlow from the late 80s, early 90s. It was all pointy just above the ears and feathered around my face. And I looked like some sort of granny from the 80s. It was really, really unflattering. It put about 20 years on me, I swear. And she sort of seemed to think it looked okay. She asked me if I wanted an after picture for social media. And I was like, no, thank you. I do not want that. So I showed her the door. She didn't charge me very much. I think she knew it was a complete bodge job. I immediately ran and stuck my head under the shower to remove the feathering effects. And ran to Boots, which luckily at the time was not far from my house, and bought about 20 of their headbands, like I'm wearing now. If you probably can't hear because you can't see because it's a podcast, but it's a very attractive headband and it does cover a multitude of sins. The moral of the story is, you know, you must brief your suppliers carefully, and you know, maybe spend more time making sure that they are up to the job and they understand what you want. And having a mirror would have been very helpful to give feedback and say, actually, I think you've put those headbands in a touch too high in my hair. I just assumed that she would know that, you know, putting them that high would mean that she was cutting my hair too short. Anyway, I've had lots of compliments on my hair, which is largely due to the fact that I am wearing lots of colourful headbands and earrings, big earrings to compensate, and lots of makeup to make me feel presentable. But I'm still getting sweaty just talking about this story right now. It is only hair. I understand that. It is only hair. But it was an unwanted transformation, and I'm finding it very tedious growing it back.
I have to say, I think for a lot of people listening, You may say it is only hair, but I hope they're not listening just before bedtime because they're going to have nightmares. But thank you so much, Janine, for that story. I can't wait to find out more about you and to let our listeners know more about who you are. I would also dig into that story a bit more. But before we do, let's have a quick introduction to the podcast.
You're listening to Storytelling with Puck, the podcast designed to show the power of stories in life and in business. Stories connect us on a deeper level, which is why we'll be sharing, chatting about, and feeling the impact they have on every one of us. Your host, Stefano, is the founder of Puck Creations, and we work with your business to define a clear, consistent, relevant brand which stands out from the crowd. We use that brand to create content that makes your audience think, feel, and take action. Visit puckcreations.com to find out more.
Before you do that, we're not going to make too many assumptions, but this one really is a no-brainer. You are going to love today's guest, the chief offer creation genius, that is Janine Coombs. Janine, please shout about yourself from the rooftops and tell us a little bit about who you are.
Oh, brilliant. I forgot I'd put that title in my LinkedIn profile. thank you for having me. First of all, Stefano, really appreciate it. Yes, as you say, I'm Janine Coombs and I am an offer specialist. And I've, looking back on my career, the final years when I was in corporate, I did create propositions in big companies, and that is what I found myself doing for small businesses, is help them put together offers, package up services, make sure that their programs are positioned well to sell as easily as possible.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So before we dig in too much into that, tell me a little bit more about, or tell our listeners a little bit more about you. And so what's your background? Where did your kind of love of marketing come from, and your love of funny stories and hair come from?
I had a corporate background. So I kind of feel like I fell into marketing because I did a business degree because I didn't want to be pigeonholed. And you did several different things. You got to do a bit of accounts and a bit of business development and a bit of operations and a bit of HR. And marketing felt like the most fun one and the most creative one for me. And I came out of uni, and after the obligatory gap year, I got a job in marketing and never looked back, really. Yeah, came out of corporate role. How long ago? It was probably about, it must be getting on for 10 years now.
Wow.
And tinkered with a few different bits before finally setting up my own business and helping small service-based business owners, which is really, really rewarding because you can really see the impact. Corporate life was fun and exciting, but I don't know, there's something about running your own business, and we were talking about this before, weren't we? We can find ways to inject more fun, and that is, we both agreed, didn't we? That is part of running your own business, is finding ways to make it enjoyable and make it fun. And if you're not finding the fun, then it's time for a little step back and a breather and a readjust.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think, again, you're right. We were talking a little bit before the show about everything that's going on with the pandemic. This is one of those universal subjects. but I feel like we're probably not alone in saying that it does sometimes make some of the days a bit less fun and a bit less... It makes you a bit less eager to want to go and do what you're doing. That's not the case for everyone, of course. Some people will be loving it right now, but it can drain you of energy. So your services are probably needed more now than ever. But even before that, this is a very special circumstance, but your business isn't because of the pandemic. Your business works in its own right. And something that I noticed you said on your profile is that you're all about making an offer juicy. So how do you go about making juicy offers?
Well, this is something that you are undoubtedly going to agree with. But the not so secret is asking people what they want, mm-hmm. with no judgment, with no assumptions. Work out who you'd really like to work with. And I'm not talking about exhaustive ideal customer avatars. I'm talking about, in an ideal world, you'd have a client that you loved working with and they paid on time and you really enjoyed the work and you really enjoyed the relationship and your values coincided. And you try and look for other people like that and just talk to them and ask them if they wouldn't mind sparing 15 minutes on a conversation with you and with their permission, record it and just ask very, very open questions about what they are struggling with that you are trying to help them with. And within there, you will get inspiration. You will get phrases and words that you can use verbatim in your sales copy and your content. Mm-hmm. And that often is a real key. And market research, I mean, I feel it myself when, you know, I've worked with coaches and consultants as and me as the client. And when the MR word comes up, it's like, oh, I just did that like last year. Why do I have to do it again? And actually it's a process that has to go on. It's a continuous process. It doesn't always mean that you have to be proactively having calls with people. It could mean that you just have to look at your testimonials or review your sales call notes, mm-hmm. or do a bit of social listening and sort of see what people are saying in Facebook groups or online. But people are talking about their problems. You just have to listen.
I love that. Just that line, I think, could sum it all up perfectly. People are talking about their problems. You just have to listen. It's so true. People are constantly... Social media is a goldmine for people who are constantly complaining about things. And I don't mean that in a horrible way, but it's true. We do it. I think everyone does. That you say, oh, somebody did this way, and it really bugged me. So if that is aligned to what you do as a business and somebody else is bugging their customers, well, instantly you've got a reason to see how you could do something a little bit better. But as you say, those things change all the time, and what bugs people changes all the time. And also, somebody's customers aren't necessarily your customers, so you do have to assess it based on who you are and what you want to do as well. But as you were talking about the market research side of things there, do you find it something that is often missing or a very, very minor part of small businesses?
Yeah, I think it's often overlooked, because when we think about market research, people might naturally think of surveys and questionnaires, mm-hmm. which is a type of market research, but it's not the only type of market research. And when we're talking about really getting into the positioning and what to put in an offer, how do you make it juicy?
Yeah.
The way you make it juicy is position it and call to the emotions of what people want, and not try and sell them what you know they need. Which I have also done, you know, despite my marketing background and how I know messaging works and all that. So many different things. I tried to sell based on, this is what you're missing. I know you need this. And then you get all down the route of trying to educate people. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very difficult to educate like the whole world or even just your target audience. They don't want to know. They don't want to know. They have in their head what they think they want or what they think they need. And if you address them and meet them where they are, you can take them on a journey and you can, you know, sell and say, okay, I see that you're struggling with this and this. That is what I can help you with. And then you can start, you know, the sales process.
That makes a lot of sense. It's interesting because often in sales, people talk about selling to people by truly understanding their needs. And they talk about selling to people by having a solution to a genuine problem. I don't disagree with those things. I think it's important that you do have a solution to a genuine problem when you are coming up with your products and your solutions and your services, etc. But I think, as you say, something that's then missed quite often is, once you get to the stage that you have a genuine solution, to be able to get that across to the market, you need to get a spark of excitement, joy, intrigue, And that then, I, from my point of view, is what pushes people to go, oh, I really, really want this. I really, really think that I want to find out more about what's going on. And sometimes then, when they are making the final purchase decision, logical objections come into play. And that's where you say, well, actually, not only do you want this, but you need it, and it's set up for you. So when people talk about needs by themselves, I often think that's not enough. And then also when people talk about desire by itself, I'm like, well, that's really good. It's a really good starting point. But actually, lots of people will then reject it when they go, well, I really want this, but I don't really need it, and I haven't got the money to buy it. And all of the objections come out and all of the logic comes out. But if you can get both points, then for me, I think that's when you've got the gold mine. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree totally. And a good question, which I'm sure you ask your own clients, is why now?
Why now?
Why now? Why now? And it's a horrible question because you're like, oh, God, I've got to try and think why. Why should they buy now? But that's the crux of it, isn't it? It's sort of where the want meets the need. So, yeah, I want it. But, you know, what's really frustrating as a business owner is, oh, it's brilliant, it's perfect for me, but maybe next year, maybe in 6 months. You're like, no, now. It's going to be more expensive. You know, it's going to be more expensive. It's not, it's going to have changed. I might have moved on. You know, there's so many different reasons why now. But if you can find even just one or two that really match up and resonate with what's in the mind of your ideal client, then you'll be on to a winner.
And that gets them to actually bite. Something I find interesting about that is I feel like there are, there's quite a lot of division, I think, in everything in life these days. So if you're on one side of the fence, you cannot possibly believe the other. Whereas I often think that opposing things can be, both be true at the same time. So there is the, when it comes to marketing and sales, there's often the side that says, well, surely you shouldn't be saying why now, because if the people aren't ready, then surely you should just say, well, okay, here I am, and you're doing content marketing and you're saying, oh, we align and our values are all right. And this is actually a lot of what we do at Puck Creations. It's all about that brand building, that content creation, that long-term relationship that you're building. And so instantly, that seems to oppose the idea of having a why now, because surely you're creating something that is making people want to bite when they're not actually ready for the product. But to me, I think both things can be true at the same time, because I think you build up those long-term relationships, you build up that trust. But at the same time, there are moments where you think, well, people will be getting close to being ready for this, but might not want to do it because in their minds, they're saying, oh, maybe a better time is this time next year, even if they actually need it at that point. And so that's when the why now comes into play of, well, actually, they do need it, but we need to get them to desire it as well, which is what I think what you were talking about earlier. What are your thoughts, I guess, on, there's kind of two questions here. The conflicts in marketing that seem to come about all the time, where if you believe one thing, you're not allowed to believe another. And also the idea of this particular conflict, or seeming conflict between buy now and build up long-term relationships.
I mean, first of all, I agree with you.
Okay, well, that's a good
I don't like pushy tactics. I don't think you need to use pushy tactics. Certainly my ideal clients and the clients that I work with all come from a place of wanting to genuinely help people. And I think that energy, if you bring that energy to whatever you're doing, it does permeate everything, and it puts the right spin on it. So it's like, this is, you know, the undercurrent is, please only buy if it's genuinely what you feel like you want and need. And you can always use content and use copy on your sales page to help people and say, I always really like having a, this is for you if, this is not for you if, like a comparison table. And you can even do blogs on 10 reasons why this is not for you. That's one of my favorite things to do a blog on, because it can be really fun and you can do it quite tongue-in-cheek as well. Yeah. But and also if you do have some contact in the sales process, like a call, which is, you know, usual for a high ticket item, you can I mean, I totally, if somebody comes on the call and they really, really want something, I'm like, you are not ready for this, you know, yeah. Then I will politely let them down easy or suggest other options or suggest other suppliers even. I won't sell it to them unless I genuinely think I can help them. And I think that's all you can do as a small business owner, isn't it? Or a big business owner. Let's have a few more big business owners doing that.
Oh, that would be beautiful, wouldn't it? If big business owners started, I mean, some of them do, but yeah, if more big business owners and big businesses started taking on this methodology, I think it would be great. But interestingly, we can also learn from some of those big businesses. And I think some of the stuff you talked about earlier really falls into that space. Because you mentioned at the very beginning the idea of making offers juicy, making very particular parts of what you do juicy at a particular time. I've never used the word juicy so much. I'm not sure. I can't remember the last time I said it. But what I love about that, and I think this comes to the question of who you're working with, because you mentioned earlier that you work with mainly service-based businesses rather than product-based businesses. And often I think service-based businesses want to sell everything they possibly can. I've read some of your blogs and listened the way that you write it, and you explain it much better than I do. But it's the idea of we need to put everything into a bunch and we need to tell the world that we can do this, 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 and that all at once. Whereas you and I have both done this in the past, campaign marketing and focusing on one particular area, it comes easy with products because you're like, well, look, I've got this lovely new mug. And so now I'm going to focus on selling this particular mug. How do you address that when it comes to selling services? It's a much harder thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's you've really zoned in on one of my favourite little topics, because there aren't many mistakes that I haven't made when running my business. When I first started setting up my own business, and I was like, okay, I'm a marketing coach / consultant, okay. And I sort of floundered for a few months because I wasn't actually putting out offers. I wasn't actually saying, you know, if you have this problem, this is what I can do to help. I wasn't actually putting out offers. So you have some businesses who are stuck in that kind of loop, just trying to be present and nice and approachable and hoping that their genius will just like draw people to them and like, oh, come to me, I can actually help you. And it's like, I call it psychic sales. It's like, I know that I'm really, really honest and hardworking, so hopefully that will just like resonate out of me through the interweb and people will get it. Or there's the other end of the spectrum where they've got so many offers, like you mentioned, that there's no focus, and people behind your back, you know, were asking, oh, do you know anybody who can help me with this? They wouldn't think of you because you've got too many things on your website, too many things, you know, like one sales post on LinkedIn would have like all 10 types of things that you do. You don't get known for one thing. And there's also the curse of being bespoke, mm-hmm. which does work for some companies, like bespoke tailoring, for instance. Mm-hmm. That is, there are not many services where I would approve of the use, the, you know, the liberal word of bespoke, because when it comes to a lot of service based businesses, people want specific. Mm-hmm. They want to know what you're doing. You know, if you're aware, if I offer bespoke websites tailored to your every whim, if I'm looking for a website developer for me, I'd want to know that they've got done loads of service-based businesses, probably coaches or consultants. If I was a plumber, I'd probably want somebody who's focused on, you know, and got some really good track records of really good plumbing or tradesman websites. If I was like a, you know, high-end fashion designer, you know, I'd want something else, wouldn't I? I'd want something really beautiful in the portfolio, you know, I would want something really tailored to me. So, or indeed, I mean, that's industry examples, but there might be something very specific I want on my website, like sales pages. You know, I'm always very attracted. If I'm writing some, you know, tear my hair out, trying to write myself some sales copy, I can help other people with sales, you know, material, but doing it on my own, it's always a different story, isn't it? If somebody has like conversion, you know, conversion copywriter, sales copywriter, that always will prick up my ears more than somebody more generic, because what I'm looking for is for words that will sell me, and it's hard to sell yourself.
It's a good point. It's interesting because, I mean, I often have debates about, and I know you do as well, about niching and people understanding niching properly and even what the term means. People often don't understand what the term means.
What does it mean? It's just a made up nonsense word, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something about a hollow part of a wall, but yeah, it's when it comes to businesses, people often associate niching with sector. And so if you want to niche, you then have to drill down to a particular sector. And they also talk about the idea that this will make you stand out. I disagree with that. I don't think that niching makes you stand out. I do think it helps you focus. It really, really helps you focus. And so there are benefits to it. There are also benefits to being, I think there are benefits to being more of a generalist when it comes to sectors. However, I think what you're honing in on there, when you were talking about the idea of, I guess, attaching yourself and getting people to understand what you really need, there's a few things that I think are really, really important with this. One is what you were talking about in terms of campaigns. So one is the idea that actually you're selling a particular product or a service. What is the benefit of that product? What does it actually do? How does it actually help someone? Because often people go, well, this is the feature, and then expect everyone else to work it out. And just go, oh, okay, this is great. This cup has a wider handle. Brilliant. Why does it matter that it has a wider handle? Mm-hmm. And then you talk about the idea, well, actually, if you have an audience who maybe have bigger hands, then having a wider handle makes it easier to grip. You're less likely to burn yourself. There's another benefit. Like, it's thinking about all of these different benefits of the product. So that's with particular products. But then it comes down to the idea of, well, still, why are people going to buy from you rather than someone else who has a product with a large handle, who has a mug with a large handle? And then you have to think about, well, actually, how do we connect with this person? And this, you talked earlier about values. What links you to a potential buyer? And then there's things like, why are you in business in the first place? What is it that makes you stand out in terms of your personality and your tone of voice, etc.? And so this is why I think everything kind of comes in to play when it comes to getting your brand right and understanding who you are. But the problem is that it all becomes really, really confusing when, for example, we work with people on their brands, and then other people are saying, but you have to focus purely on products. And again, it's this idea of these things clash, but they really, really don't. It's everything you mentioned there, I think, is so important in terms of getting a campaign right and getting people to understand why they would buy this particular thing at this particular time. But without the background stuff of having a good brand, people are going to go somewhere else because they can probably get the same kind of product. I'm not sure I have a question on that other than kind of just give me your thoughts.
Yeah. It can be a jumble. I mean, I like to rely on my... I remember a lot from my degree. Some people are like, oh, I did a degree and it was useless. I got a lot from my degree.
Good.
And one of them was a really, really clear understanding of corporate structure, including marketing. It's sort of like I've got a really clear idea of all the different functions, how they work together, and how you have an overarching strategy and then the functions sit underneath. And the branding is so high level. It is strategic. It is interwoven into the topmost decisions about your business. You know, you decide what industry you're in and generally what you do, and then branding is very, very close after that. It is a part of marketing, but also it runs through everything. So, I always find it much easier, and this is why I've tried to tighten up my my content in the recent years, because I really like working with people who already have quite a good grasp on their brand, because it makes it so much easier for me, because the offers sit underneath. It's like you've already got a good idea of your values, you've already got a good idea of your tone of voice and how you want to turn up, and you're used to turning up on social media, and maybe you do a bit of content, and then you can start to really get some nice crystal clear offers underneath. Yes. And they need to align with those values. If you're trying to define your whole business, and this is, I see this all the time, and I've done it myself, I see this all the time, is people get tied up and they're trying to define their whole business at an offer level. But offer level is quite, is relatively low down.
Yes.
It's hard, because when you're setting up your own business and you want to get going and you want to be selling immediately, you probably haven't taken a step back and worked out your brand and your tone of voice and your values, and then, you know, just spend a couple of months on that and then do your offers. You probably haven't, because you'd be crazy to do that if you need some money in right now. But that is actually how it works. The offers sit underneath the branding.
Completely agree. 100% agree. It's interesting, again, because we're often working with clients who are just about to scale up. So they're at a stage where they have got a reasonable size business. They've been, basically, their whole business has been based on offers. It's been based on, they've got a really good product and they've got a really good reason for people to buy that product. They've got, you know, USPs for that actual product. But then they haven't quite worked out what to do next. So if they want to become a slightly bigger company, how do they make sure that everybody is aligned and everyone has consistency in the way that they're speaking? How do they make sure that the decisions of the next products or services they sell are actually something to do with the business, and they're not just picking them because they're like, oh, somebody else is selling that, that looks good, which doesn't actually then make sense to them as a brand and as a business. So really they're starting a whole new business somewhere else, if that makes sense, rather than having a secondary offer which caters to who they are at the core. And I think that's why often we, ideally, people would set up their brands at the very beginning. But as you say, it rarely happens, because people go, oh, I've got this really great stuff and I want to sell it. And that's understandable, because you also need to make some money. Mm. So for us, kind of our ideal clients are the ones who are just about to scale up. But what's really important is that both of these things go hand in hand. You need these good offers, but to make the decisions on which offers to choose, you need to have a brand to back it up, to say, well, I'm choosing this because it aligns with everything else we do. And it doesn't go against our values. It doesn't go against our core reason for existing in the first place. Anyway, that's how I see it personally. And that's how kind of we advise our clients. And I feel like from what you were saying, you have a similar point of view on that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And just touching back on something you said earlier about branding and niching.
Let's leave that hanging for a second to remind you all that you're currently listening to the newly feathered Chief Offer Creation Genius, that is Janine Coombs, talk about all things marketing. We've had offers, positioning, a story about her haircut, and we're just about to dig deeper into Janine's thoughts on niching. That's before we go on to talk about division, wigs, where to find Janine, and of course we'll have a story from Puck Creations. So, take a break from it all and start listening again as we make this episode even juicier.
I completely agree that you don't have to be niche. I wrote an article for Market Ed Live.
It's very good, by the way.
Oh, did you read it?
I did read it, yes. Very good article.
You don't have to be a niche operator. You don't. And I see so many people resisting it. And it's perfectly fine to be a generalist. I'm a generalist. I certainly don't niche by industry. I do try and define my target audience as sharply as possible.
And I think that's very different, by the way, but very important.
It is different. It is different. Defining your target audience is different from niching, and people just muddle the two up. And again, you can have a nice overarching, okay, who does my brand, who do I want to appeal to with my brand? Who do I want to call to and build an audience with? Then you take it down a step and you look at your offer. Yes. And that is more precise. And that, like, it would be fine if I did an offer purely for VAs or purely for coaches, and that could sit underneath. It doesn't mean that I've suddenly become a VA niche provider. It just means that that offer I have tailor-made for that specific customer group.
That's it. I think you have just summed up my personal thoughts precisely. I genuinely do. I feel like I might just cut out the rest of the podcast and just have you saying that, because I feel like that's all we need. That's exactly it. That's exactly the way I personally think a good business is run, that you have the ground level, you have the base, you have the structure, the foundations, which is what we often work on, and then maybe we should collaborate. We pass you on to Janine, who then helps you to come up with the really good offers. and because you've got the foundations, but now the offers can be in place. And yes, if you feel like this particular offer is really, really right for this particular part of your target audience in this particular sector, then of course, niche, it makes sense. It's your focus area. It still won't make you stand out. I've also got a blog on this, so we should send both of the people to both of those blogs. they target slightly different areas of the niche world. It still won't make you stand out. Yes, I will. But anyway, enough posturing about blogs. This is now all about you and about wigs. That's where I think we need to go from here. We're going to niche down to wigs. And I want to start by focusing in on your story that you talked about at the beginning. Now, as I said, this is a nightmare scenario for so many people. Everyone gets scared of going to a new hairdresser because what if they get it wrong? What if, what happens in this situation? But before we got to the point of them chopping off all your hair and giving you a Mohican, oh no, I'm going to show a video, I can't lie about that. She hasn't got a Mohican. before they got to the point of chopping off all your hair and feathering it, you mentioned the reason that you wanted to cut your hair quite a lot shorter than just a trim. And that was so that you could donate it to children with cancer who needed hair for wigs. Is that right? Have I got that?
Yeah,
right?
I donated it to the Little Princess Trust. But the children, I don't know whether they'd know how to make a wig. So just
no, that's fair. Wow. You never know. Maybe there's an extra skill that could be learned there.
Oh so, dear.
Yeah.
Child labour. Make your own wigs. Not a good mixture. Right, okay, moving on.
So, but that really is a wonderful thing to do. I absolutely love it. But I am wondering if the reason, other than, you know, all of the lovely, virtuous, moral reasons that you did it, is partly because you wear so many wigs.
Oh, the tenuous link!
tell us more about your wig wearing and actually what that means more in terms of building up your own brand a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So you're harking back a bit, because I haven't done one of my silly videos for maybe 2 years?
No, that can't be true.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, I think it was 2019 was the last one, autumn 2019. It was called The Secret Marketing Show, and it all kicked off because I did one video that was silly on LinkedIn, and I was ever so nervous to post it. But it got such a good reception, and I am a bit of an entertainer at heart. Like, if people start laughing, I'll start acting up and like getting crazier and crazier.
Just
exactly. It's embarrassing. I can't control it. So I started creating these sillier and sillier videos, and I was dressing up, you know, in wigs. I've got a small selection of wigs now, and makeup, and I dressed up like a man in one of them, and a granny in another one, and a child, and they were all on topic, you know. Don't get me wrong, they're all about marketing, it was really good fun. Going back to the F word. Mm. Really, really good fun. And the couple of series that I did, my positioning was slightly different then.
Yeah.
So that was the shame. I couldn't really, easily repurpose them. I keep meaning to go back and seeing if I can cherry pick some of them and cut out some of the narration at the end so I can repurpose them, because they're blooming good, you know.
They genuinely are. I'm going to recommend people to go and look at them. They're hilarious.
I have a YouTube channel. They've just sat there, you know, not doing anything with them, and people might come across them and go, what the hell is this? but I had a whale of a time. But I am trying to think about how I could do some more funny videos, because I've done so few videos in the last 18 months that people have probably forgotten what I even looked like.
I doubt that, but at the same time, it would be great. I think, but then again, this all depends on everything else, because this is exactly what we were talking about. Does it align with you and your current brand and your positioning, etc.? But what I loved about them was the fact that when we talk to people about their brand, we say there are four key pillars, four key areas that you need to have in your brand. You need to be clear. You need to have a consistent message. You need to be relevant, which you talked about earlier. You said they needed to be aligned with what you were doing at the time, and they needed to make sense. Mm. And the final one, and I think this is the one that lots of people struggle with the most, is that you need to stand out. You need to be different. And what I loved about those videos, and I think one of the reasons they got such a good reaction in the first place, was that they were actually different. Mm. It was so refreshing. And this isn't to have a go at anyone else who, you know, kind of does a little bit of copy and paste video straight to the camera talking very seriously about their subject, because they're different in other ways and they know how to stand out in other ways. But for me, I do get a little bit bored watching some of those videos and I kind of skip past them. But when I saw, and we've known each other for a little while, so when I saw a little thumbnail of you wearing this grey wig.
Instantly. Oh no, that was my actual hair. I sprayed it with hairspray. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was a wig.
that was my actual hair.
That's even better. But yeah, so when I saw that, I just thought, hang on a second, what is she doing? What's she up to? And then you watch the whole video and you don't just have the idea, you pull it off really well. And so as much as maybe this isn't something you're going to continue, maybe you're not going to do silly videos in the past, what I loved about it, and I think is an important lesson maybe for other people trying to get their brands working, is the fact that it stood out, but it was still relevant. And it was consistent across the time that you were doing the series, because it fitted in with your brand. But at the end of every single one, you had a really, really clear message. So for me, you got everything pinpoint as to what you needed to be doing.
Yes. I need to do it again. I'll find a way to do it. I do want to do something fun again on video. I just want to find a way to make it relevant. But yeah. The problem with the wigs also is... I think I have quite a bland face. And when I put wigs on, people don't recognise me. They don't recognise me. And I'm so good at the makeup as well. People actually thought I was Barry. No, they didn't really. They didn't really think I was a man. But, I had one photo. I thought I'd do a quick poll the audience on what background I should have on my video template. You know, should it be grey? Should it be pink? Should it be, I don't know, whatever colour it was, blue. And I had a still of me wearing my black, really sort of sharp wig, like it's almost like a flapper wig, very severe. And I'm looking like traumatised in the video. I look a bit angry and like wild. So I've got a weird facial expression, which is absolutely fine. I don't mind sharing that on LinkedIn. And I had lots of people, you know, that kind of simple feedback post does really well on LinkedIn. And I had lots of people saying, oh, you should do the grey, you should do the pink. And then some people were like, I don't think that works at all as a headshot photo. You look angry in it. You know, go to this site and find out, you know, get feedback on your headshot. And I'm like, I'm not. Have you read the post? You see my profile image? This is not my hair. I'm wearing a wig. You know.
What I love about that is it actually leads on to something which I think is quite relevant here, which is the idea, and I don't want to become too meta on LinkedIn, because it's sometimes I think people feel like LinkedIn is the only platform you can possibly ever do business on. It's
clear. Of course you can. No, the others are obsolete. I don't recommend any of the other
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If anybody has any sense, you will never do business anywhere else.
I'm presuming LinkedIn will give us a little kickback.
Yeah. I've got a deal going on. I've got a deal going on. Yeah. I'll give you 5%. But
But you
do sometimes get the LinkedIn police, and you get the this should be only on Facebook. And, you know, all of that kind of nonsense going on. But you also just mentioned there people who decide, who judge what kind of profile picture you should have and what kind of background picture you should have based on their projections of what they think a business should be. How do you think that relates to good marketing?
Oh, it's tricky, isn't it? And you've got to watch it because we will all get feedback. Critical feedback, well-meaning feedback.
Quite often, yeah.
From people who are not our ideal customers. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, you don't want to do that because you're cutting out this part of the of your audience. They're not my audience. They're not my target audience. Oh, I wouldn't use that. One woman said, oh, I don't like that pink. You know, sorry, I just do not like that pink. And I'm like, that's all right. It's one of my brand colours, so I'm going to use it anyway.
Also,
you don't have to like it.
Well, don't wear it.
Fine. You know, I had a client yesterday I was on the phone to, and we were talking about her brand name. And she said, oh, I don't, you know, I've always wondered about it. And some people don't, it has a reference to dog in the name. And she said, some people don't even like dogs. And I was like, it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as it's, you know, it's professional sounding. She was in a professional services. As long as it's professional sounding, it doesn't matter.
No, it really doesn't matter. I think people obsess about things like this. And once again, I think this does come back to setting up your brand well enough in the first place. If you have a particular set of values, if you have a particular reason for doing your business in the first place, for going in a certain direction, that will align with not just customers, by the way, because your ideal audiences or your audiences are not just your customers. They are suppliers. They are collaborators. Employees. Yes. Your audience is much, much wider. Sorry, I've had whole rants on this on other people's podcasts, so I shouldn't go on my own.
Rant away!
It's so frustrating. But there's a difference again between that and your ideal client. And again, this often comes back to your offers as well. And sometimes your ideal clients vary. You can have more than one ideal client based on the offer that you're putting out. But when you're talking about your audience, if you're doing the kinds of things that align to you and to your brand and to who you are when you originally set up, and you have that confidence in who you are when you originally set up, you then understand that you kind of create your audience because you're creating your audience based on who you are. I think you said something very similar to this at the beginning. So I'm basically just copying what you said. But, but that's the reality. So when people who are not your audience start saying, well, you shouldn't be doing this. There's no harm in listening to people. Some people sometimes have good advice who aren't your audience, and actually maybe you're really not tapping into your own audience or into your own values and your own brand. But most of the time, assess it, and if you still feel comfortable with it because it's who you are, then as far as I'm concerned, go with it. Keep going. And the likelihood is it will turn out to be successful with the people who are actually aligned to you and actually want to buy the kinds of things that you sell. What are your thoughts on that, and how that can be tainted by the social media world where everyone's got an opinion?
It started making me think about the sort of fear of criticism and watering down your values, watering down your personality, your quirks, perhaps. For fear of criticism, and you end up with quite a wishy-washy brand that looks like everybody else's. And if you want cut through, it's better to be a little bit against the grain. Not necessarily, you know, you don't have to set out to be against the grain, but, you know, I for instance, I know a really a woman with a lovely personal brand. In fact, she helps people with personal brands, so that helps. But she's an introvert, so she's not wild and wacky and loud and in your face and crazy. She comes across as calm and competent, and she's got her clear brand values, and her tone of voice is, you know, well defined. And she cuts through. She doesn't look like anybody else.
It's brilliant. As far as I'm concerned, that is what will make your business thrive. If you're able to cut through in that way and then add the really good offers to it as well. But I think that's what will set you apart from everyone else. I wrote a blog last Christmas about the Christmas ads. And it amazed me how so many of the Christmas ads made me want to go and buy something from John Lewis, because all of them had basically just copied John Lewis. So instead of advertising themselves, I just went, oh yeah, that reminds me of John Lewis. And so kind of thought, I want to go and buy something from John Lewis. But then Lidl did an ad, which was brilliant because they were cheeky and they were themselves. And they were like, they actually took the mickey out of all of the other ads that were trying to be John Lewis, which I just thought was amazing.
Oh, I missed that one. I think I did read your blog. Yeah, you're so right. It's, and I do see quite a few. I know a website is only one element of what a client will see, but I see quite a few websites that look very, very similar, and they look like a particular influencer. And it's like, have you done that deliberately, or was it an accident, or how did that happen? They all look exactly the same.
Yeah.
I look at them and I'm like, I'm thinking of this other person.
Yes. Interestingly, in my previous, that was a long time ago, but in my previous work, working for Global Radio, and we towards the end of my time there, we had started actually selling websites as well. And we used to go to some people and ask them, so where do you currently set up your website? How do you do it? And especially, it seemed to be in the motor trade quite a lot. There were people who would say, oh, well, we go to this motor trade website company who have this template. And I looked at it and I went, but isn't that X, Y, and Z's website? Because I had seen that website a week ago when I'd gone to a different company. And they were like, no, this is our own website. But it was exactly the same. It was just a copy and paste of all of exactly the same tabs and all of the pictures. I think a lot of them were even stock photos, were in the same place. And the only thing that was different was that they had their own logo and their own company name.
Oh my God, I'm going to start up a business like that. That's brilliant. It's exactly, and the customers don't care that it's exactly the same, or they don't notice.
Well, I think the thing is, their websites weren't exactly the main thing that were attracting customers. They had a good location.
No, fair enough.
But it still baffled me, because they could have attracted customers if they had only thought about it and done something slightly different.
I mean, a company of any sort of critical mass should really have a very well-defined brand. And if that's not coming through on the website, it's surely not a consistent experience.
No, exactly that. And it's interesting, because I think there are quite a few companies who think they have a very well-defined brand, but actually when you really dig down into them, they don't. And you can see it by mainly through inconsistencies, actually. Inconsistent, and also through the copy and paste job that they have done on things like their website or on videos that go out, which are like, well, I remember this from last week, but it wasn't you. So suddenly you think, well, are you really standing out, or are you just copying someone else? I realise I'm being very critical today.
Maybe I'm bringing it out of you.
Maybe that's it. And I don't mean to be, because there are so many other things that people have to consider. And
true. Yeah,
your brand is just part of it. There's all of the different relationship building, the sales that you do, etc. But I think the reason I get a bit like this, and the reason that I really care about helping clients, is because I see so many companies that are great in so many ways but aren't being successful because they haven't got a good brand, or they don't have a good offer. Those two things. It's not even that they don't have a good offer. They can't explain their offer well enough. I don't know about you, but you're not going as... I don't think you're criticising as much as I am, but do you have that feeling too sometimes with that kind of sense when you see really great businesses and ideas and they're just not quite doing it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I see it all the time, and I empathize because I've been there.
Yeah.
I have been there. It's all trial and error, and you try something and then you're like, oh no, I don't know how to do that. Absolutely. What else was I going to say? And I see a lot of, in fact, I mean, the brand and the offers, which coincidentally is what you and I offer. You offer brand and I offer offers.
This has sounded like a big sales pitch on this podcast today. Apologies. This wasn't the intention, everyone. But
it just doesn't get as much airtime as the sort of sales stuff, like the content creation. Like I see so many people tearing their hair out. I don't know what to post. What do I create content on? Where do you start? And it's like, well, you know, if you've got a clear brand and you know what you're selling and to who, you know,
it becomes easy.
It all falls into place. I mean, I've got so many content ideas. It's just, and most of my clients as well, I don't know many of them. I can't think of any of them at the moment who have problem with content creation or inspiration or what to put on social media, because once you know who you're selling to, what they're struggling with, and what your solution is, and have a clear values and, you know, kind of foundational branding, it's all there. I mean, you've got too much. It's, my problem is always I'm almost overwhelmed with the amount of ideas. It's like, oh my gosh, what ideas to tackle now. If I'm quiet on social media or blogging, it's because I'm knackered.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah.
What a bit of a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's or I don't want any sales at that point. Or, you know, it's not because of lack of inspiration.
No, I agree with you there. That's interesting, actually. Maybe we should be adding that to our benefits when we're selling to people. One of the benefits is content creation is going to become a lot easier because it's true.
On my sales page.
There you go. No. You're ahead of the game. But it is true. It is true. It's something that we talk with our clients about all the time, is having that initial setup makes the rest of your life so much easier. It makes the rest of your sales so much easier. It makes decision making. Even because, again, we do work with freelancers, but we're often working with smaller to medium sized businesses. It even makes a lot of your internal decision making and your internal processes easier. Who do you choose as a supplier? Mm. It's not a problem. You know who to choose as a supplier because there's no way you would want to go to company Y because they completely disagree with your values. They go against everything you stand for. And so you're not going to hire X employee because X employee doesn't believe in the things that you believe as a company. Mm. If you have all that in place, suddenly all of those decisions are so, so much easier. And then when you're selling to your ideal clients and you have the right offer, then again, you can come up with the content that says, this is who we are. This is the offer that we have. This is why it matters to you. And as you said, this is why now.
Mm.
It all links.
Mic drop.
Bam. I think on that mic drop moment, we should maybe start directing people to find out how they can get a better understanding of their offer and how they can get a better understanding of how to get people to think why now. And that all comes from finding you. So where can people find you?
Yes. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Do Janine Coombs. Go and visit my website, janinecoombs.co.uk. I have a group program coming up. Can I talk about that?
Yeah, of course you can. Very exciting.
Oh, thanks. It's going to be compact and bijou. It's the first time I've run it, so I'm running it as a bit of a beta. There's going to be maximum of 8 people, and it's going to be a 3-month group program. And it is entitled Your Sizzling Hot Offer. I came up with that like yesterday, so I'm quite excited about it. So drop me a line, or the sales page is not live yet because I'm a fly by the seat of my pants kind of gal. But if you contact me, I can give people more information.
I like it a lot. Your sizzling hot offer. I feel like as well, you need to make some kind of audio ad for that and have your sizzling hot Arthur.
That's, yeah, like I almost, I want to do like a, audio. I haven't thought about that. I'm going to do a video, but it's so many ideas. I'm like, oh, this is the box of wigs getting opened, you know, immediately after this. But I think I could do something quite sort of tongue in cheek, sort of OTT, salesy, rip-off kind of thing.
I like that. I think it fits your brand perfectly as well, which goes alongside everything we've been talking about today.
It's just up in a bow.
It's so sweet. But genuinely, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for allowing me to vent, by the way. This is meant to be all about you and your podcast, and I had a big vent on it, but it's been such a pleasure.
Oh, no,
talking to
you, it's fabulous. We can't shut us up.
Exactly. Some people are probably thinking, I wish they would. But
good job. You know, if they're still listening now, more fool them.
Exactly. Come on, turn it off. I'm going to actually wait. Don't turn it off just yet, because there is a story to come.
Ooh.
Which is why you all tuned in the first place.
Yes.
And that story will be a story from Puck Creations. But for now, once again, Janine, thank you so much.
Thanks, Stefano. I loved it.
A few quieter days had readied me for adventure. So as soon as I reached the small town of Thames in New Zealand, I dropped off my bags and started to walk. Following the very clear directions towards the coast, kindly provided to me by the lady running the hostel reception, I ended up nowhere near the coast. As with all of these situations, I didn't really mind. Thames has some beautiful back streets and houses. Locals are a treat too. A lovely couple, Karen and Graham, started chatting to me, and once I explained that I was visiting their rarely visited town as part of a much longer trip, they were happy to direct me towards a walking trail. They even gave me an extra bottle of water to keep me going. 2.5 hours into my walk, and with less notable views than I might have expected, I wondered if I had taken the wrong path. Still, I was enjoying the adventure, and it wasn't much longer before I came across a junction with a few signposts, offering some less than attractive options. I could continue on the same slightly sleepy trail for 4 more hours. I could turn back. Or I could follow an alternative path back towards Thames. 3 hours to Thames sounded like a challenge to me. So I picked up the pace and started on my way. It didn't take long for me to doubt my decision. Paths were not obvious. There were lots of steep climbs, dangerous drops, and natural barriers in the way. I was almost turning on my heels to go back the way I came when I reached one of the most beautiful views I could possibly imagine. Like a kid in a sweet shop, the temptation was too strong. I had to see what else there was. Oh, what an adventure this became. Ducking and diving around trees, navigating my way through bog, not always successfully, and jumping from rock to rock to pass rivers and streams. It wasn't all this difficult. The occasional wide path and flat terrain even gave me the opportunity to jog a little, but as soon as the path narrowed again, I would tread very carefully. Unfortunately, treading carefully wasn't enough when I came closer to death than I've ever been. The terrain had fooled me. Beneath my feet was what seemed to be solid ground, but in fact, it was just a pile of fallen branches and leaves covering the nothingness below. I stepped and I fell. With a reflex not usually associated with my physique, I managed to grab onto an overhanging tree. Above me was a narrow path and some rocks. Below me was a drop that nobody could survive. With nothing but adrenaline fueling me, I pulled myself back up. It was all the more incredible because I had never before managed even one pull-up. I got back on the path and I started moving again as if nothing had happened. All the way to the end of the trail. Which, by the way, I completed in less than 2 hours. I felt great. There was no panic, no fear, nothing. It was all very strange. Only come the evening, sitting in the hostel lounge, watching movies and reflecting on my adventurous day, did it hit me. The fear made me shudder, and even as I read this, years later, my heart beats faster at what could have been. I had been wishing for a more adventurous day, and I certainly got one. Still, be careful what you wish for. You've just been listening to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We'll be back very soon, so make sure you subscribe and catch up on any of the episodes you've missed.